Thank you, Dave. Thanks for inviting me out, and I appreciate it, and glad to see everybody here tonight. And this is being recorded, so just for, to make sure this is a matter of record, there's approximately 300 to 400 people here tonight. So, I'm a little nervous. So anyway, again, my name is Thomas, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And I'm glad everybody's here tonight. I was blessed to walk into an AA meeting that actually tried to follow what the first 100 did in July 1984. July 27, 1984 is my sobriety date. And that I'd went to that meeting about 8 or 12 weeks earlier. And what I heard there that night in the beginner's meeting, I knew where to go when I hit my bottom. But I come from very humble beginnings of alcoholism on both sides, but especially my dad's side, and all the typical things that come with that. This disease is, like it says in the text, you know, it affects everyone around the sufferer. Everybody suffers that is in contact with alcoholics. My grandfather was a very sick human being, and they had 7 kids, and my dad was one of them. He was the oldest, and the intrinsic nature of this disease, to break the chain of it, it's such a beautiful thing to see people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and recover from this disease, and especially when they have families, or before they start families, to break it, because there's so many things that aren't obvious that are very obvious to us as we move through the progression of our illness. I was a very troubled child from the beginning. I developed resentments, had hatred in my mind and heart as a young child, and I hated my stepmother with a passion, and my mom threw me and my sister into that situation on 2 occasions. And my dad was a brutal drunk. He would come home and beat my stepmother. And sadly, as a little 7-year-old kid, I enjoyed him doing that because I hated her so bad and I couldn't do anything about it, the way she treated me and my sister. Because of this program, in working through this process, I was able to see many things in a different light, including that human being. And you know, her circumstances were terrible, and I couldn't see anything except my side when I was a little kid. But you know, when we're doing our inventory, that fourth column, we're asked, what did I do, if anything? And it's pretty rare that you get to put not applicable or nothing. But yeah, I was a blameless child, but I come to understand that, you know, she had, you know, 6 kids, was pregnant, had a brain tumor I wasn't aware of, an alcoholic husband who abused her when he was drinking. He was a pretty good dad when he wasn't, and he's going to that AA thing. But my dad was a poor example of an alcoholic. My dad would come in after being gone for 2 or 3 weeks, and he'd be so sick he couldn't get off the couch. Had to use a number 2 wash tub to urinate and dry heave into off the side of the couch. He had to crawl to the bathroom if he had to go to number 2. So I never got that bad. So I didn't have a good example of what an alcoholic was in my dad, that's for sure. But made my way through a couple of state institutions as a teenager, and before I got sent off to the first one, they tried everything, including sending me to a psychiatrist, and I liked that psychiatrist. She was a nice lady, and we'd just play checkers and talk, you know, or chess, and you know, but I kept getting in trouble, so they sent me away, and then I was there about 3.5 to 4 months, and then was out 3 months, and me and my buddy, I think we were like 14, and we got to stealing cars, and they caught us finally, and they only got us for like 19 of them. So, if I'd have been an adult, of course, I'd have been in the penitentiary. But they did the best they could and sent me to the state reformatory for young men. And I turned 15 in there, and I had an epiphany when I turned 15. I said, "Thomas, why are you in here?" "Well, you like money, you like cars, you like drinking and chasing girls." And I said, "Well, how can you do all that without stealing?" And I said, "Just work." So, wow, what a novel idea. And so when I got out of there, I went to work, and I have 8.5 years of formal education, and I've been working ever since. And fortunately, I did plenty of things between the time I got sober, which I was 24 years old when I got sober, to end up in the penitentiary. Made it to several jails, but didn't get caught for anything to get me to the penitentiary. So I was lucky, I guess. But one of the things that alcoholics have is, like the text says, you know, most alcoholics have an above average earning capacity. And if you think about it, because we're such masters at rationalization and justification, we make great salespeople, and it's just natural because we sell ourselves such a lie for, you know, so long, and try to do the same with people that love us and care about us, and employers and employees, so forth and so on. It's just second nature. But one of the things I did that showed the brilliant mind that I had, obviously, even though, you know, I just wasn't that interested in school. But, you know, I could always pretty much do anything I set my mind to. It was just, I was totally selfish and self-centered, like common trait amongst alcoholics. But I had a good buddy, and he was my same buddy that we got in a lot of trouble together. And he was a little challenged, and he was in special ed. And so I saw the work he did in school, in his class, and, you know, hey, I liked hanging out, so I worked my way into special ed. And, you know, not many people aspire to do that. But so I was special. And so I worked my way into special ed, and so I'm an Olympian. I went to Special Olympics. And I feel terrible about that. But, you know, again, we're so full of crap. And we can lie our way into anything. You know, rationalization, justification. I felt bad about that, you know, standing up there collecting those medals. I mean, I was fast when I was young. But, well, there was a lot of fast teams there, but me and my buddies got it done. But, so, anyway, I started working in my oil field when I was 16. My dad signed papers, and I started working in the oil fields on drilling rigs when I was 16 years old, and, renting my own place, had my own car, and I was born in 59, so I cut out the 9 and turned it over to 6 so I could get in the bars legally. And so I was running the bars regular before that, but I could go in any bar then. And so, you know, I thought I had arrived at that point in my life, and I knew everything. There wasn't anything anybody could teach me. And I met my wife, which, because of this program, I still have today. I met her when I think it was 18 when we met, and we lived together for a while and broke up, and we're back together for a little while and broke up, and but I didn't really know what love was really then before I got sober. My understanding of what love is today is a lot different, and it's, you know, in the last 31 plus years of my life than what my idea of what love was then. And but my mother-in-law was a wonderful person, and my wife came from a split home, and as did I, and, but, so I just, I thought the world of her mother, but, so when we split up the last time, she was staying with her mom, and I got wind that she was seeing somebody, and I wasn't very happy about that. So, I thought that I needed to show her how much I loved her and how bad of an idea was it for this fellow to be taking her out. So I went over and waited on the porch with my .22 pistol, and I wasn't going to shoot him. I was just going to pistol whip him. And they didn't show up, and I ended up breaking in the house and left the gun on the porch. And my mother-in-law came in, and I was crashed out in Rhonda's bed. And they woke me up and asked me to leave. And so, you know, she didn't think much of me, to say the least. But again, because of this program, she come to love me and trust me. And I certainly love her. And and the same thing with Rhonda's dad. So, you know, I couldn't blame him, because I have a daughter who's divorced from her husband, and he's one of us, and he's currently, they're divorced, and he's sitting in the penitentiary in Oklahoma. And that's a whole nother story there. But we got married in, when I was 21 years old, and she had a little boy from her first marriage. And I really, really tried to stop drinking. And I don't know but a few people in this room tonight, but if I met anybody's family here, or anybody close to you that has been hurt by anyone in this room's drinking, I would be the first to tell them, you know, anytime he or she has ever said that they're going to quit for good this time, and that they're really sorry for what they've done, I would let them know that they were telling the truth, because we mean it. We don't, you know, when we really get serious about trying to stop, and you know, and we can't, we're telling the truth, but we just don't know how. And it's baffling. This the text called, you know, it says it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, this disease of alcoholism. It's one of the only diseases known that human beings will have and deny that they have it. I've never had a bad toothache that I denied. You know, I went to the dentist. I've been fortunate, haven't broke a bunch of bones or anything, but you know, if you got something bad wrong with you, you're going to go try to get it took care of. This disease isn't like that, as a general rule. And I chaired the beginners meeting at my home group, and you know, when I always ask new people if they've been trying to stop, if they've tried to stop. And if someone hasn't really tried to stop or control their drinking, I've not seen anybody really stick with Alcoholics Anonymous, because the willpower is so strong. If you haven't really tried to stop or moderate or control on your own, then that's an unanswered question, because you don't know if you can, if you haven't done it. But anybody in this room tonight who's tried knows what I'm talking about. There's a big difference between, you know, can I or can't I control this thing? And so fast forward a little bit. I tried for 3 years to stop drinking, and I was serious about it. And I would, on an average, I would swear off on Sunday or Monday, and not touch a drop maybe for till Friday. And then sometime Friday, the thought would come through my mind that a cold beer or two would taste good. And sanity, or God, would say, well, you said you quit drinking. And then the self would say, well, I'm not talking about getting drunk. I'm just talking about having a beer or two. I can't get drunk on a beer or two. So, of course, I'd rationalize doing it. And I would stop at the store and after work and buy two tall boys, of course, because I'm only having two. And I would I didn't know what was going on then, but I do now because of this program. I didn't know what was happening, but I was aware of it, and it, because it bothered me. I was puzzled by it because I would not be finished with the first half of the first beer, and my mind, and it was like an overwhelming, just overwhelmed my being, and it said, "You're gonna have to get more beer," and I didn't understand what was going on. But I understand today what's going on. The physical craving had kicked in. I'm what's referred to in the text as a real alcoholic. And the short definition of that is if you can't control the amount that you drink once you start to drink, even if you only meant to have one or two, you have an allergy of the body that manifests itself in the form of a craving, an actual physical craving. And there's nothing the mind can do about a physical issue like that. It's a physical craving beyond my mental control. But I know how hard I tried to not do it. And I did it over and over and over. And so when I in 84, around May or so, I could tell that my wife had enough, and so I said I'm going to AA, and she didn't seem real excited about it, but I went down the street to a place and I met a guy there by the name of Paul, and he invited me to a meeting the next night, a beginner's meeting. I was living in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time, and so I went with him that next night. And in that meeting, I heard what I just shared about this physical issue. And I said, that makes absolute sense to me. That's what happens to me. And I was very happy when I left that meeting that night because of that information. It, hey, okay, that's what's going on. Because I know how hard I tried to not drink, but I couldn't stop it once I swallowed it. That made perfect sense for me. But that's all I heard because I wasn't finished drinking. But I stayed dry about 10 days. And, of course, just like it says in the doctor's opinion, you know, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. To them, the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They're restless, irritable, and discontented, comma. That's why I'm stone cold dry. I can absolutely relate to being restless, irritable, and discontent when I didn't have a drink in me. And that's why I needed a drink. So, you know, after, you know, unless they can, you know, have some more drinks and, you know, drinks which they see others taking with impunity after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and pass through the well-known stages of a spree, they emerge remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And this is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope for the recovery. Now, that's a tall order, isn't it? An entire psychic change. AA is not a not drinking program. That's a given. It's a life-changing program. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. And so I'm not a big fan of people who, and if I offend anybody, I'm not meaning to, but you hear one of the slogans around AA that I'm not that fond of, meeting makers make it. If that was followed up with meeting makers make it that study the big book and try to do what the first 100 did, I'd be fine with it. But that last part seems to get left out because I've known hundreds, if not more, people who have been that kind of person, who've come to AA and just thought that meetings would do it. And there's lots of people in AA today that do still do it. They have to have several meetings a week. Some people go to 2 meetings a day, and I understand why. It's group therapy. And, you know, discussion meetings primarily is what I'm talking about. You know, you can go in and listen to other people that understand you, tell their stories and plead their case and gripe about their families or wives or husbands or kids or parents or whatever. and you chime in and get your, you know, off your chest what you need to get said. There's a lot of therapeutic value in that, no doubt about it. And it's cheap. You know, if you got a buck thrown in the basket or whatever, whatever, that's great. If you don't, fine. Cheap therapy. And it works as good as it works, but it doesn't work. If you're a real alcoholic, especially, and that's who the text is primarily speaking to, that's primarily who it was written about and for. As anybody here knows, it was a pretty closed society when it first got started. And then they opened it up for basically anybody who has an honest desire to stop drinking. So you can be a moderate drinker or hard drinker. You don't have to be a real alcoholic. But in the beginning you did, to be able to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I understand the reason why. Because the people that are moderate drinkers and hard drinkers that come to Alcoholics Anonymous still have the power of will. And they can not work all the program. They can do half measures and be okay. But for real alcoholics, anybody that can relate to that allergy, that craving issue, good is the enemy of the best. Nothing but the best will do. Because the work that it takes to undergo an entire psychic change is outlined between the pages 103. The doctor's opinion, but preferably the very front, the beginning of Roman numerals, up through page 103. And, a lot of people in this room have heard How It Works read many, many times. And the A, B, and C take us through steps 1 and 2, because it says, being convinced, comma, right after A, B, and C, convinced of what? Steps 1 and 2. 1 and 2 are such an important foundation, they used 5 chapters to take us through just 2 steps. So when people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they're new, they need to hear, you know, because they look at these things and hear the first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. You know, sadly, I've heard people say, yeah, my sponsor's got me working on step 1 for, we're going to be on it for this long and that long and all this. You know, basically, you've worked step 1 before you ever come to AA. But as far as understanding why you can accept that proposal, which is step 1, is the job of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous to help you understand. Because I'm powerless over alcohol because, obviously, of the physical craving issue. I'm absolutely powerless over it. I tried my best to have power over this thing. But I understand because of this physical allergy, I'm absolutely powerless over it. And as far as unmanageability, I've met lots of people who have lots of things in order in their lives, still have their families, plenty of money, house, jobs, whatever, everything good, except their inability to control their drinking. And but it's easy to find the unmanageability piece. If for most alcoholics, it's pretty easy. I didn't know how to be a friend. I didn't have any relationships that lasted very long because I would let you down. I was prone to violence. I grew up around a lot of violence, and I was a violent person when I started drinking, generally, as a general rule. And it didn't matter who it was. I would just get a thought in my head or whatever, and it just, you know, I'd just go off. But, that's part of, I was so sick, I just didn't know, I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false on a lot of issues. I thought everything was how I thought it was. And, so the necessity to undergo an entire psychic change was obvious to me for sure. In my mind, things just never seemed to work out. And I always had problems. And I didn't know why. Because I thought everything I did was correct. And I was always right. I thought I was wrong once, but I was mistaken. And most alcoholics understand that. So, it's, this program is, I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world to be sitting here tonight. And I've felt that way since I hit my bottom on July 27, 1984. I've never stopped feeling that way. You know, step two came to believe a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. A lot of people have a problem with God, but, you know, it's not that difficult. Most people sense that there's something, even power, people who have been atheists. Most people are agnostics and don't know they're agnostics. That just means without knowledge, agnostic. I didn't know I was an agnostic. One thing my sponsor made me do when I say made me, he suggested I do, is get a dictionary when I got sober. Because my vocabulary was very limited, as you can well imagine, with 8.5 years of formal education. Now, I could cuss good. I could cuss real good. And I still can. But the difference today is I sport cuss. I don't cuss for any other reason. Because I don't get mad. I've never met an alcoholic who handles anger well. You hear anybody talking about they're handling this or they're handling that. You need to remind them about, you're handling, what do you mean you're handling? That's not how it works. So, you know, working through this process, a lot of people, you know, especially you new people here tonight, if you've looked at the steps, don't let anybody scare you about any of the steps. A lot of people look at the steps brand new that never even talked to anybody about it, but they see the steps and they'll see that fourth step, and they see the fifth step, and admitted to God, to ourselves, and other human beings, the exact nature of our wrongs. And they get scared to death thinking about the idea of talking to people about their deepest, darkest secrets. I have no idea how many fifth steps I've done with people, but I can assure you, a sponsor who knows what they're doing in this program knows this for sure. You don't remember anything, as a general rule. I couldn't tell you a dime of anything of any fifth step I've ever done with somebody, because God's involved in that, and there's nothing to be afraid of. It's this process is one of the most exciting things that you'll ever do in your life, because you're getting to know yourself for the first time at a level that's necessary to undergo an entire psychic change. If you don't know what's in there, how can you possibly get rid of what you don't need and get what you do need? It's pretty simple stuff. You know, Bill used the example of a business inventory. I don't know what's in that kitchen and there in those cabinets, but, you know, get a pencil and paper and we can go in there and note where everything's at, what cabinets it in, the placement of it, so forth and so on. Things we find bad, expired, we throw away, no regret. Replace them with new. Things need to be reorganized that are out of order. We redraw the plan on how to do that. This process is exactly like that. It's that simple. And human beings have been doing what human beings have been doing to each other since recorded history. So there's nobody that's in this room that's experienced anything that probably other people in this room haven't experienced too. Okay? And you know, most things, I can't speak for women, but for men, most men, it's you know, either sexually related issues that they're scared to death about, stealing, robbery, betrayal, things that are the deep, dark secrets that they want to take to their grave with them. And again, the beautiful thing about a sponsor who knows what they're doing is the reality is this: I don't care what you've done. That's why you don't do your fifth step with your brother, your sister, your mom, or your dad. You do it with somebody who's unaffected. I know what you're doing. You're trying to straighten your life up and get free. Because the beautiful thing about it, when you give that to somebody else, to God and another human being, it's no longer just yours. So the sense of loneliness and despair, a sense of pressure. It's amazing how those things start disappearing so quickly in this process. And when we get up to that ninth step and we get that ninth step work done, like Tech says, we get our sanity back. And we're told in the 10th step to practice the first 9. And 11, to keep working on developing a relationship with the God of our understanding. And 12, we try to give it all away, trying to help others. I was very honored to be invited to chair the beginner's meeting when I was about 6 months sober. I worked through the steps in 3.5 months. And I've been sponsoring people ever since for the last 31 plus years. My sponsor got on me one time. My first sponsee, I forgot his name, but I was giving him a ride. He's come around for 3 or 4 weeks there, and I was picking him up at his house. But he didn't show up one Thursday, and I tried calling. There wasn't any cell phones back then, believe it or not. And so he didn't answer his phone. So I drove over to his house and, checking on him. And I went up on the porch, and the front door was open, but the screen door was closed. And I saw him in there in the chair, passed out. I assumed he was passed out. And so I just walked on in and shook him awake and drug him out on the porch, talked to him. And I told my sponsor about it, and he said, "Thomas, you can't walk into people's houses and pull them out of their houses." And I used to do that to people for the wrong reason, but so I didn't have a problem doing it. But you can't do that. So you could get shot or something, and it wouldn't be their fault. So, but I love this program. I've seen it. What it's done in my life, my family's life. I have a relationship with my kids, my adult children. Two of them live with me, and my 4-year-old grandson. My oldest son works with me, a nephew works with me in my company. My wife works with me in my company. I played golf yesterday with 3 guys that I've sponsored for 20-something years. Don here, when did we meet? When did you get sober? What year was it? Been so long, I forgot.
December 31st, 1999.
Now, if this guy can get sober, anybody can get sober. Okay? Me and another sponsor, were answering phones at an intergroup, and he drugged Don in there, and that's how I met Don. But Don does a lot of good work in this area, and good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He tries to share what's in the big book, because the program is found in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You've got A, meetings. You've got that piece of it, the fellowship, which is what we're doing now. And after this, before the talking before, the talking after. And that's a beautiful, big part of this program. Very important. But, the fellowship alone, as I said, is not enough. Bill spends the first half of the chapter of their solution talking about how that, the fellowship alone is not enough. You have to work this program. You have to do what the first 100 did. And so, if anybody ever asks you where the program's at, you say, well, it's between Roman numerals and page 103 specifically, as far as where the clear-cut precise directions on how to recover from alcoholism are at. That's where they're at. But again, you have the first 5 chapters that take us through two steps, and then just 3 chapters that take us through the next 10 steps. So obviously, steps 1 and 2 are very important because of that foundation. And, the 12th step, if you're not trying to give this away, we've got great forgetters. And this disease wants us to forget where we come from. You forget where you come from, it's easy to get lost. I've seen lots of people sadly get lost. People come here and do good work, get busy, work through these steps, sponsoring people, their lives get rich and full. Next thing you know, they're doing so good, they're too busy to go to AA. Another thing I don't understand is people worry about the clock. I never let my drinking, the clock never got in the way of my drinking. My home group's 2-hour meeting. We take a break after the first hour. you know, sometimes people just got to get up and go. And I understand sometimes people have responsibilities they can't, you know, neglect. And I understand that, and I appreciate that. But so early, especially early in Friday, it's important to stay real busy. And then later on, when you're sponsoring people and stuff, it's important to stay and hang around and work with people later. So, you know, I'm not a big clock watcher. I get home when I get home. And so it's 7:57, but, you know, folks, I can tell you, I get along with my family. I get along with people. I have anywhere from 80 to 100 and something different bosses a year. I'm a general contractor, so if I'm working for you, you're the boss, you know, and I'm your employee. So I want you to be happy. And we're told to practice these principles in all our affairs. I started my company when I got sober. So in 31 years of business, I've hired an attorney 2 times, and the issues were resolved without going to court. I don't have problems. And so my wife and I just celebrated 35 years. We weren't together when I got here. Didn't look like we were going to get back together. But again, because I was willing to do this, work this program, and that's a whole story in itself. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. This program, I love how it says, was on page XX, it talks about the percentages. You know, 50% of those come, they get sober immediately. 25% sober after some relapses. And others come to a few AA meetings and at first decide they didn't want the program, but many of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. And what they're, I think that's 1956, when that was, that observation was made and put in the big book. And the good news is that that's 75% recovery rate average, okay? And you could argue it's actually more than that. And I can assure you that that 75% is still applicable today for people who are introduced to the program by Alcoholics Anonymous and are willing to work the program by Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's several people in this room tonight. Don's one of them, I know for sure. When you introduce this program, if you're willing, there's no wonderment about how to stay sober. There's zero wonderment about what to do. Like the text says, one of the promises, you know, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Right? I used to think I had to be right. I had to prove my point. I had to make sure you understood that you were wrong and I was right. I don't have to do that today. It's okay. I don't need to do that. Just because somebody's not spiritually or mentally well at the moment in their lives doesn't mean that I have to react to it the way that I used to. I don't have to bite. And I don't, as a general rule. If I follow the directions, it's hard to... I fall a little short. The one place I fall a little short is my tolerance for bullies. I still am working on that, but I have very low tolerance for bullies. And in bullying in any way, shape, or form, that's one thing I really have to work hard on it. But I'm making good progress. But anyway, we have any questions about anything? Anybody, any new folks here have any questions about anything? Or old folks, whatever. Don't be shy.
Hey, Ben.
You
talk about step 2, there being agnostic and atheist, and kind of get into that and you kind of live a different way. Do you talk more about step 2 at all?
Yeah, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, step 2. Well, you know, there's a lot of hope in that you don't have to do it right now. You should be being willing to move down the road of believing possibly that you might be able to consider working on developing a relationship with a power greater than yourself. And, you know, if you have to, you know, when you're talking to a real good hard-headed person that really thinks that they know for sure that there ain't nothing, you know, just the idea of, you know, removing it ever how many times that you need to reach, because generally you can, has been my experience. And, you know, would you consider the remote possibility of being willing to consider that there might be something at work in this universe that you might not be maybe aware of fully? So that little bit of hope, if you can help a man find a little bit of hope in the possibility, just that little cracking of the door of open-mindedness on this idea of a power greater than ourselves goes a long way. I've got one sponsee, he's the only guy I've worked with who was raised in his situation. His dad was a professor at George Mason, and he never was exposed to any spiritual or religious teachings whatsoever in his home, period, in his life. And he had a really hard time with the idea of God. And another guy that I sponsored was sponsoring him at the time, and I was trying to help him, working with him. And, you know, I talked about that approach, you know, trying to help him get open-minded about that by the removal of the even thinking about it as far as I could. And he was having difficulty still. And he was in and out for about 6 years. And then one day, and I've been praying about it, thinking about it, and this thought came to him. God gave me this thought. He said, Thomas, why does math work? And I'm not a mathematician, but I know 1 + 1 = 2, but why? Why is 1 + 1 = 2? And of course, everybody knows good accountants. You ask what 1 + 1 is, they say, what do you want it to be? Right? But, so I said, pose the question to him. Why does math work? And of course, he says, well, because 1 + 1 = 2. You add 1 and 1 and it equals 2. Well, why? Why? Where did that come from? And so that line of questioning got him puzzled. And because he was a man of science himself. He is a man of science. And because you can always ask the question why. And that's one of the things that is so wonderful about this program, is being open-minded and willing enough to ask why, instead of thinking that I know everything. I don't mind asking, well, why? Or how did you come up with that? Where did that come from? You know, why? Because we were always really good with quick, short answers for our own lives about everything. And if you will question the answer to the questions and dig 2 or 3 deep, it's amazing how much you can discover as to how much more there is to just the obvious. And so coming to believe infers later, came. So, and hopefully if a person walks into Alcoholics Anonymous and sees people that are happy, joyous, and free and talking about these things and how they did it, most people can get on with the idea of, well, it's just like they say in the text, you know, if they can get it, I don't know why I can't. If it's good enough for them, it'll be good enough for me. You know, I can have this thing too. You know, it's that hope. There's the power of hope. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the thing I saw. And I was so impressed with the people that I met at that meeting, because they did not look, act, or talk like I felt. It was very attractive. So hopefully when people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, they're made to feel welcome, and people reach out to them and talk to them about these things and what, how they've affected their lives. There's a lot of people have a lot of, we're problem people. That's what the text says. We're problem people. And through this program, you know, I have the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for the God of my understanding that I met here and the relationship I developed here with the God of my understanding. And I love how when Abby was talking to Bill in the kitchen, in Bill's story, any Joe and Charlie fans here? Joe and Charlie, Big Book Study fans? Okay. I was blessed to, Joe is my grand sponsor. Okay. So that's, I was very lucky to walk into AA, I did. And, you know, we had, Joe and Charlie were up in 05 at LaFont Plaza or in the district, and we had them over our group on Thursday night, and it was awesome. And, they paid us the greatest compliment they ever could have. They said it reminded them of the original West Side group, which was my original home group in Tulsa on the west side of Arkansas River, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And his wife, we lost Joe a year ago in December. And his wife, Phyllis, she's doing fine. She's still living in Tulsa and she's doing good. And Charlie's wife, Barbara's still doing good. And So I know how lucky I am. If, you know, please, I guess you can download it on something, on the phone, on your phone or something. I don't know crap about technology, okay? I'm still a paper pencil guy. But Joe and Charlie Big Book Study, please download it on your phone or order it, order the CDs. And, you know, it's, it will absolutely open up the Big Book for you, this program. But, anybody else? Any questions about anything?
Brad, how about
it? Brad?
You talked about the open minded and loneliness, and I was more interested in the fact when you said, you know, it's not just going dry, it's about a new lifestyle and changing up society. Can you explain that a little more of your experience?
Yeah, the, if you just go to AA meetings, again, there's therapeutic value there. You know, just like here. I mean, I've spent the majority of this meeting talking about the program about Alcoholics Anonymous, as written between Roman numerals and page 103 specifically in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Because that's what changes lives. This is a life-changing program. Drinking has so little to do with being an alcoholic, it's hardly worth mentioning. Everybody in this room has a different story on how, what their variance in times were between drinks. I've known guys who went years without drinking. I love the story about the guy, you talk about willpower, a guy in morbid alcoholism, didn't drink for 25 years because he wanted to be successful in business, got filthy rich and pulled out the slippers in the bottle and was dead within 4 years. Obviously he had the allergy. Because he said he tried to quit, you know, then the story, yeah, he went to the hospital, had, you know, all the money to get the best treatment possible. So if you don't study the Big Book, and you know, one of the things I always tell people in the beginners meeting too is, one thing you better think about is this. Some of the sickest human beings in the world walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of the healthiest remain to pray. But how are you going to know if I'm talking to you about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous if you don't study it for yourself? And I couldn't read worth a crap when I first got here. I was embarrassed to read. I was embarrassed to talk. You know, my vocabulary's gotten a little better. I took an interest in words, the meanings of words, and their origins. And so, you know, I might look like stupid, but I'm not related. But, so it's getting involved with what's in the text and finding groups that are committed to studying the Big Book and what the first 100 did, if you want to get sober, if you want to change your life, if you don't want to be unhappy anymore, if you want to really get sober, just doing, trying to do what the first 100 did, keeping it simple, because it still works just as good today. Like I said, you know, that math on Roman numeral XX is absolutely still applicable today. I sponsor lots of guys who are doing great. I sponsor guys who got well over 20 years, so forth and so on. I sponsor guys who had who'd been around AA for varying lengths of times, who never worked the program. Guys who've been in and out of AA for very, very different trips. And because, again, they never worked the program. Why? Sadly, a lot of people walk into AA, they get online or call intergroup, and, you know, they don't know what they're looking for, except they need to go to AA. And sadly, a lot of times people walk into a discussion meeting where they're, a lot of times what happens in discussion meetings, people who've been to them know, I'm not saying all discussion meetings are bad, because whoever's present makes up the discussion meeting. But again, a lot of discussion meetings are comprised of people who haven't really worked the program, a lot of them. Okay? Don't know, and I'm sure they'd share if they knew. They would pull people aside or talk about things. You know, in our group, we have a beginner's meeting. If you don't have a beginner's meeting in your home group and new people come to your group, in my humble opinion, the home group members should be all on board with the idea of saying, okay, we're going to get into the doctor's opinion here because you're here tonight. And then somebody can grab them after the meeting, and if they want to get involved, they can get involved. But it's important because a lot of people only get one chance. They'll go to that AA place because they really want to, because they're hurting, and they don't know what else to do. And I always ask this question too in the beginner's meeting. And I would like to ask it of everybody in this room tonight. Did anybody in this room grow up with the aspiration and the goal of becoming a hopeless, helpless alcoholic and join Alcoholics Anonymous? Was that a life goal of anybody in this room? Could I see a show of hands? I've never seen one hand go up in 31 plus years. So you guys, we're all in the same boat. Nobody wants to go to AA. I did not want to go to AA. Nobody wants to go to AA. So usually when people come walking through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're looking for help. Well, it's real simple. Our job is to give them the help they're looking for, and that's to educate them minimally on steps 1 and 2. Step 1 is the problem. Step 2 is the solution. And if the word and the idea of God bothers you and runs you out the door, booze, if you live, will run your ass back in it. Okay? That's the long and short of it. Now, you don't have to be mean about it. But as far as being able to be honest and open about it, okay, and give credit where credit's due, it's absolutely, I give all the credit to God and Alcoholics Anonymous for my life. And I don't have any problems. If I would have wrote down when I got sober what I wanted my life to be like and what I was going to have and do, I would have cut myself way short. Because, you know, one of the other great things about Alcoholics Anonymous, there's people of various ages in this room, but the older people in this room will know exactly what I'm getting ready to say, and that's this. My grandpa lived to be 95, and he had his wits about him until he was about 93. All his friends were gone by the time he was 85. Most people grow up, go through life, develop close friendships with 2 or 3 or maybe 4 people, really, really close friendships. And as we age, you know, people start passing away. And so one of the benefits of this program is if you follow all the directions, you're going to always be making new friends. You're going to, because you're always going to be sponsoring people. So hopefully, till you're gone. And in doing that, what do you have? You're constantly, you know, giving your love, your time, you see. And in doing that, People want to be a part of your life. People didn't want to be around me that much. But, you know, one thing I was sure of, and I'm sure there's some people who can relate to this in this room, when I was drinking, I was just sure that everybody wanted to see me. So I'd go visiting. That's what we call in Oklahoma. We'd go visiting. There wasn't no, the protocol out here is, you know, you call and, hey, like, when can we get together? Let's make an appointment or set a schedule to get together. Now, I just show up. And usually people weren't that glad to see me. But anyway, so anybody else got anything? Any of you? Don't be shy. So you new folks, if you don't have a big book, please get you one. The new people in this room, please hang out after this meeting, and so people can let people meet you, okay? And don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of, because especially those of you who understand about not being able to stop drinking once you start, even though you didn't mean to drink as much as you drank, you couldn't help it. You're a real alcoholic. You have a deadly disease, and you must undergo an entire psychic change. That's your reality. And if you aren't willing to do that, then that's not a good thing. Because everybody around you and you are going to suffer. The suffering will go on. And I've buried several family members. Most recently, my nephew, 2 years ago, January, as a direct result of this disease. His mom, his dad, my wife and I finished raising him and his brother, and my dad, and uncle, and so it's, and people have been around this program a while. You know people, and probably people before you got here that are not here anymore as a direct result of this disease. As we, and that's, you know, that tragedy of especially people who come here looking for help and they don't really find the help they're looking for, that's just inexcusable. Because a lot of them ain't going to make it back. And you had one chance. But I know one thing for sure, everybody in this room tonight has heard about the problem and the solution. So see, I can go home and rest on my pillow good tonight. All you new folks, right? Get your big book, get busy in this program. Go to step studies, big book studies, beginner meetings. After you get through the ninth step, then if you want to go to discussion meetings are great places to find sponsees. Okay? All right. Well, that's all out of me, I guess.